Donna Ashworth, joy. Joy. We nobody owns joy, but we celebrate joy. How about that?
I love that.
Yeah.
We can be custodians of it.
Yes.
Pass it on.
Joy is something that I've banged on about since I was little, because that's why I wanted to do telly, because I wanted to make people feel joyful. And joy is, for me, for you, feels like the next step from the stuff that you've been doing.
Yeah, I think the sort of point of it all, ultimately, is joy. But if you want to really feel joy, you have to become very good at feeling all of the other things as well.
You have to feel.
You have to feel your sadness in the same, celebratory way, but with respect, the same amount of respect and all the feelings in between. So I'm a huge believer in that the ultimate point is to be more joyful. But it's complicated what happens in the process in between, the space in between.
Well, welcome to the joy world.
This is
reasons to be joyful, after all. So we've got lots of reasons to be joyful.
Yeah.
So go on, say it. How many books now?
12.
12.
12.
Books.
A nice dozen.
only a very few years.
Since 2020. I think my first one was self-published summer of 2020.
Because of the pandemic?
Because it was a pandemic poetry book, and I thought, I'm going to do this. I'm going to take a little shot. I just did it myself. It was not very good, the book. But
Don't say that.
I say that in a loving way.
No, don't say. Don't ever
because
say it. Don't say it in any way, because you did it.
Yes.
And it. Well, don't be so judgmental.
Yeah, no, I hear you. You're right. The poems inside stand up. What I mean is the actual physical book, because you don't know how to publish a book unless you've studied it, researched it. So I just came at it from, if I don't do it really quickly, I'll never do it. I'll talk myself out of it. And also I thought lockdown was going to be over. It was over when I published it briefly. And then who knew it was actually going to come back around several times over the next couple of years. I thought it would be forgotten, lockdown.
I don't think we're ever going to forget it, really.
No. It's funny because even now, I had an opportunity to read one of the poems from it this morning on radio, and I didn't want to read it.
You were with my Chrissy.
With Chris, who's the just like yourself, and such huge fans of you both. And seeing you both on the same day has blown my mind for the last couple of weeks that I've known it's happening, because I see you together in my mind.
I love Chrissy. But we're talking about you.
Okay.
So you read it on...
I didn't read it. I chose another one because I don't know about you, but I can sometimes get quite a jolt when I'm really reminded about the lockdown. In detail, about the things that happened, like the rainbows on the windows.
We lost people that we knew, so yeah.
It's quite traumatic. A lot of people don't particularly want to be jolted back in there, you know, with something that is quite impactful. And it's World Kindness Day today. And I'm a huge believer in, you've got a few seconds to impart a message. What do you want people to take away? And I wanted them to take away how the small kindnesses that we do every day are huge. They start small, but they grow. The minute you put that kindness out, it begins the ripple effect, it radiates. And even when you're asleep, that kindness that you did earlier that day,
absolutely,
it's still working
and it's resonating,
and it's contagious. The person you were kind to is kind to someone else, and on it goes. So I wanted that to be the message. That's why I didn't read it.
So the very first time when in lockdown and you did the poem and then everybody was saying your words, what had happened before that for you to get to that stage that suddenly all these years later and all these books later?
So I was a songwriter in my early 20s, and I wrote a lot of songs and poems as a youngster. And as is the way of life, you don't do things like that. As a hobby, we're not encouraged to have hobbies when you're out there trying to make
you
a
should.
Living.
Hobbies are important.
I know.
They bring
but
joy.
Life takes over, doesn't it? So you're in that rat race. I have to do something that will pay the bills and so on and so forth. So I became, wrapped up in a life that was very busy, although I worked in magazines for a few years, which was creative and exciting in that way. But you're not sort of creatively writing emotionally. I was interviewing people and I was writing about fitness and fashion and things like that, which was lovely. And then I think sort of mid-40s, my husband and I, we had bought a children's play centre when the kids were born. And we thought it'll be a nice family business. We can all go to work together. You know, we had this really sort of white picket fence image that what a wonderful thing it will be to do. And it was, but these children's play centres are 7 days a week. They only shut on Christmas Day and New Year's Day, and they are full on. You know, the doors open at 9 a.m. and the kids run in, and it does not stop until, you
know. But that's joyful.
It is joyful.
For them.
For them. The sensory overload of it, which I didn't anticipate, and, you know, back then, was quite a lot for me. it was 10,000 square feet. It was a big place.
Wow.
So we did enjoy it and we loved it. And the kids came with us and they had their birthday party. And that was lovely. But about 5 years in, I started to really feel the need to be creative. And mentally, I think I was on a bit of a dip. If you look back over your life, you can kind of see the moments where your mental health is on a decline and maybe you're not doing enough to feed your soul and bring in the joy. And I definitely wasn't. We were just working and looking after the kids.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And I really wanted to reach out to more people, and I wanted to have deeper conversations, and I wanted to write about things that were deep, but I didn't know how, and I didn't know, I didn't have the confidence to put my name to it or be bold about it. So I started a little blog and I was anonymous. It was called ladiespassiton.com, and it was a place where women could come and chat, and I loved it. But out of that grew, I still don't really quite know how it happened. Little bits of poetry started coming out and quotes and things like that. And then the pandemic hit. And just as the pandemic hit, I had been starting to write poetry, and it was the perfect storm. Mm. We had to close the business. It was the first thing to close, children's play centres. So we had no jobs, we had no income. My son had just been diagnosed with autism, and we could not get him into school prior to the pandemic. He was unable to do that. So everything was beginning to implode personally, and then the world locked down, and it felt like nothing's ever going to be the same again. And that's when I decided to move back to Scotland, and I managed to persuade my husband to come. And it's the best thing we've ever done, because my mum's there, my sister's there. We have such a, you know, family unit, and it's peaceful.
And the boys like it, though.
Boys love it. It took a bit.
Yeah.
You know, there was a period where we thought, what have we done? Mm-hmm. And it wasn't easy trying to find a school for my son and all of that. It was a real scary time. But within about a year, it was clear that this was the best decision that we've ever made. And I started writing more and more. And then we didn't have jobs. My husband pivoted and became a builder. And I pivoted and became an author. And I thought this would be really nice if I could make this work as an actual job. And it's just gone
and
from
it
there.
Has.
And it's worked. And I'm so grateful is the word.
That's a great word. But you've made it happen.
It's funny, because I felt like it was a snowball that was moving without me, really.
Really.
And all I had to do was continue to be brave to show up. I felt like it was something bigger than me. And it was a bit of an opportunity, a hand from up above. But I was terrified. I was wrapped up in the hole.
Were you really?
Oh, gosh. I was, you know, I was mid-40s. And, you know, who am I to suddenly decide that I can be a writer? Who am I to suddenly decide that I can get up and speak in front of people? That took years of hard work and hypnotherapy and all of that. I had to really cross the cringe and constantly face the fear. And what I decided to do was be open about that every step of the way. So if I had to go and speak somewhere for the first time, I would share that and say, how am I going to do this? Mm. I'm terrified, but I'm going to do it, and, you know, I'll write about it. So I felt like I just had to keep being brave, and everything else has felt quite organic.
So when you write, there's a lot that you write about. I get the feeling that you're always thinking of others as well, which is lovely. But it's deeply personal. Is there ever a time where you sort of want to, I can't think what, that not be as personal?
I've not ever been very good at that. And so I'm actually on the spectrum as well. I'm neurodiverse, so I realise now that a lot of my life was spent creating a personality that would pass muster. People would believe and I would be normal and everybody would be happy with me.
And who wants to be normal?
Who wants to be normal? No. So a lot of masking was going on. And the thing about these masks is, you know, you wear them, they protect you, but eventually they suffocate you. And so it was a real ripping off of the mask, the poetry. And I call it the great unravelling. Now, whenever I have unravelled, it's happened a few times in my life, there is an element that of which you join in and you unpick the first stitch, but then it's out of your hands. This was always meant to happen. The unravelling occurs. Everything that you were no longer meant to carry leaves. And I know it happens to everybody because I see it. I see these you know, life shifts where people say everything fell apart. But it was unpicked for a reason. You know, it was a lovely suit at one point that became a cage, you know, became a straitjacket. And so the great unraveling happened and I have never been able to stop oversharing since. But I'm also a huge believer that oversharing is a love language.
Yeah, oh no, absolutely. I'm absolutely not knocking you for it.
No,
I just think sometimes you ever sit back and think, oh, I can't believe I just shared that.
Yeah. All the time.
Oh, you do. That's interesting.
And I try not to sort of judge what I've said, but I'll come off an event or radio as I did this morning and I'll go, why did I think it was a good idea to do Palmier's accent on Chris Evans' radio show? Why did I do that? And then I'll say, stop, Donna. Because there's, you know, you choose to, it's all from the good of your heart
yourself.
Because you know, and the one thing, the one resounding thing that's come out of the last 5 years of constantly writing poetry every day is that I'm learning about myself so much. I'm being so much easier on myself now than I ever have been.
What have you learned?
Kinder.
What have you learned?
Well, these thoughts that we have, you know, you wake up every day and 97% of your thoughts are the same as they were yesterday. And the actions that you undertake are actually carried out by your body. Your brain's not even in control. You're living in the past. It's muscle memory. You do exactly the same thing that you did yesterday. So each day we're living in the past. We're not actually waking up in the morning and resetting and being in the present.
Ah, that's my belief. I believe in living in the moment.
The moment.
Yeah.
So there is a little filter in your brain called the RAS filter, R-A-S. And it waits for you to wake up. It takes your first sort of half a dozen thoughts. And then that's the thoughts. That's what it does for the rest of the day. So it will repeat all of
this
for you.
In my book, this is really weird.
Is it really?
No, because I talk about waking up in the morning and the very first thing you do is popping a smile on your face because it tells the brain that everything's okay.
It does.
Even if that, just for that moment. And if you've got some really awful things, which a lot of people have, and you were telling me heartbreaking stories before we came on air, you know, even in that, when you've got that, just for that second, your brain has that hit of feeling a little.
So it literally copies and pastes those thoughts for the rest of the day. And that's what it looks for. So if you wake up and you go, I've got no money and I'm really, you know, this is what's happening. Nobody likes me. Your brain goes, oh, okay, we're doing this today. And it seeks it out. And so when you find that out, you're never doing that again, are you? You literally, you wake up in the morning and you go, ah, look at that view. Aren't my curtains lovely? I'm very grateful for this bed. Oh, I slept, you know, really well. And you just set, you know, the radio station, you choose your radio station for the day. We're doing positive FM. And I'm always saying that it's not about sweeping the negative under. It's the opposite. You know, these positive people like yourself, they're not ignoring the tragedies and the negatives of this world. That, you know, they've been there all the time. They go there all the time. To they've mined at the coal face of rock bottom and they found this little nugget of gold and they bring it back up and they share it with you. So if a positive person
But it's about
shines,
reframing. It's reframing all the time. It's very interesting. I was talking to somebody the other day who's going through some awful, awful things. Really, really sad and difficult, very, very difficult. And I said, instead of always saying, but what if this happens? You know, there's a percentage that that might happen. So why don't you say, but out loud say, I know that I'm going to succeed at that.
Yeah.
And they said, well, I can't do that. I said, why? Because it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
So throw the embarrassment away.
Yeah, cross the cringe. Yeah, yeah. I'm always saying it. Everything good is on the other side of cringe, across the river of cringe. It might seem trivial, it might seem woo-woo, it might seem, you know, too sweet, but it works and it's real gratitude.
So have you done that?
Works.
Have you done that?
Yes, yeah. But I continue to do it. Mm. You're never quite set in stone. It's a constant work in progress. The reframing for me is all day, every day. And, you know, it's every single thought that I have. What's the best that could happen? Not what's the worst that could happen, you know. Look around me right now. What are five amazing things that I can see? Look at these people
the
over
sunshine.
There.
The sunshine.
Yeah, they're clearly in love. That's a mum and a daughter, you know. These are things I'm starting to look for now. Because what you seek, you find.
Well, it's like, I would say to people, when they get angry, when somebody's going slowly in the car, yeah, or somebody overtakes them, I say, you don't know what's happening
in their
life.
Why. Yeah.
So that person might be rushing because maybe they're going to have a baby.
Yeah.
Maybe somebody is very ill.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, instead of thinking, oh, what pasta, get out of my way, think, okay, I'll let you through.
100%.
Yeah.
And so you make these choices all day long and all night long. And sometimes I can feel myself deliberately not doing it. And I will allow myself a short period of time to be meh,
yeah,
and do a bit
normal.
Of wallowing because it's fun.
That's normal. That's normal.
But
that's normal.
I'm on, you know, I'm on watch with it. I'm like, right, Donna, you've got half an hour.
So does this all feel pinch me moment with the books and with the social media and with people knowing who you are and the fame, you know, air quotes, because that word is just silly.
Yeah.
But does it all feel like, what the hell is that?
Just feels like a giant gift from above. And I made a decision right from the start. There was two big decisions that I made, is that I wouldn't edit the work that I did. It comes as a message. It's about the message. It's not about the language or how good the poetry is. None of that. What will the person reading this get? That's what it's about. So it goes straight
out. It's always giving.
And then that way,
it forward.
Yeah, I don't critique it. I don't criticise it. Because once you start editing things, you shave and you shave and you shave until what's left is probably quite similar.
So you mean literally you don't edit your poems?
No, when they go in the book, they'll be checked for spelling mistakes,
yeah,
and things,
yeah, yeah,
like that. But I don't rewrite or think that's not good enough or I'll try that again or anything like
good.
That. Occasionally I have, but only for really good reasons. Somebody's asked for it to be, you know, for a wedding or something, and I've maybe
right,
gone,
okay, okay,
but not for to make it better, because we don't really know what it is that makes our work good. It's like, I recently watched something about people who are having plastic surgery done, and they've had their upper eyes taken away. And it's
their
been,
upper eyes taken away?
Yeah, bear with me on this, because I've really
segued. You don't mean taken away, you mean altered?
Yeah.
Taken away, they haven't had their eyelids taken away.
Well, they get the skin taken away.
Yeah, the skin taken away, and not the eyelids.
It turned out to be the thing that, one of their things that was making them super attractive, and it completely changed their face. And it's all over the place at the moment, and it just really interests me, because you wouldn't think your saggy eyelids were providing you any kind of attractiveness. But we don't know what it is about anything or anyone that makes it beautiful to the eye of the beholder.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
your words are the same. If you start critiquing it, you're coming from a place of imposter syndrome, or, you know, you're not feeling great that day, or you think you need to, yeah, be more like someone else. You might be shaving off the bit that made it what's special.
Absolutely.
So that was one thing that I said that I wouldn't do. And the second thing was that I'm not on a journey to a destination. There is no destination. I've spent my whole life being on the road to somewhere and not being on the journey itself. So I decided that whatever
again,
was
living in the moment.
Living in the moment, I would enjoy every single piece of the journey without thinking, where is this going? What's the big picture? I've not been doing that. So I'm having a blast. Being here today has pinched me. Excuse me.
Please, will you read a poem? Just open it on any page and see. Have you planned one?
Well, that one was, the ribbon was on it. So shall we choose a different one?
You know, whatever. Why don't you flip? Go on. Why don't you do that? And I'll say stop. So start again.
That was a very sad one, and I don't know.
Oh, no. You can know. It's whatever we stop at.
This one is called Right Now. What if you get to the end of your life and you suddenly make the connection that you were supposed to enjoy it? That you were supposed to let go and live, make stories to pass on, because material possessions don't bring half as much joy as the memories of love that you leave? What if you realise too late that your cellulite and tummy rolls were adorable, actually, and should never, ever have been enough to stop you having fun? What if your last thoughts were regrets for not enjoying this ride and giving it all that you had? What if you stopped that from happening right here, right now? What if?
Perfect. Absolutely perfect, because that's exactly what we've just been talking about. There is, you know, it's very interesting when a journalist asks questions. Very often they say, you know, guilty pleasures or what, any regrets? And I always say no, because I've learned from them.
Yeah, and if you go back and change things that you could, you know, mark down as regrets, you wouldn't be where you are right now and who you are right now.
There are things that you wish you had done. Don't ever regret things that you have done.
I have no regrets. I was recently asked that, and I thought, I don't want to be the person who says, oh, I have no regrets, but I genuinely don't.
Yeah.
Because
each one of them was
a lesson.
Yeah.
And valuable. You know, you're so many versions of yourself in this life. I think we kind of believe that we're you know, a child, a teenager, an adult, then an old person. But actually, I think there's like 30 or 40 versions of you.
Oh, I just stay 33 all the time. I'm not changing my age. It's interesting that, I mean, the people that you now know, the people you mix with, the events that you do, do you think, if you think back, do you think I knew that was going to happen?
No, I didn't know
really
anything was going to happen. But I had a huge feeling that something big would come if I could unravel the mask and this, you know, and if I could only access. I had decided that my 50s and my 60s were going to be amazing because I've decided that they're going to be. And so I'm the only person that I'm aware of who's been desperate to turn 50. I turned 50 in April because my 40s were so much better than my 30s and so on. And you just get to a stage where you go, wait a minute, none of this matters. This is not important. It's the small things that are important.
Mm.
Literally, it's not cliche, it's not twee. It's literally true. All of the tiny things that you do and think every day are the huge things.
That's right. If I may, just pick up on what you just said, because there are a lot of people when we feel the same. So a lot of people, when I go on about joy and everything, they just go, oh, isn't it a bit trite? Isn't it a bit twee? And I go, it might be to you.
But it works. We know it works. And we've tried it. You know, we've literally been down at the coalface and used it. And these little reframing things, they're now coming forward with the science. So I've become obsessed with the science. I went on a Joe Dispenza retreat this year in Mexico, and he studies your thoughts. Your thoughts are electric. They literally instruct every single thing that happens in your body. So this is no longer woo-woo. You can think yourself well, you can think yourself happy. Yeah. We have the science now. We can measure every single effect that every thought has, and every emotion creates a chemical. So I love now collating the science together. And I was lucky enough to meet Ruby Wax last week, and she gave me her book, and I am loving it because it's called How to Be Human. And she's got such a funny, witty way of putting all of that, you know, science. And she's written this book with a monk and a neuroscientist. So you've got all the aspects of it. And once you see the science, you can call it trite all you like, but it works.
It works.
It's real.
Yeah.
And, you know, look at the people who are doing it and look at their quality of life.
But it's very interesting. I mean, I was reading something about, you know, human frequencies and being on a higher frequency. And it was being framed as something so simple. And I loved this. It was, if you're on a higher frequency and higher energy, that a baby in a pram will always turn their head to you and smile. And I just thought that was such a simple thing. And it's there's certain things that I'll find, and I'll ask people. I'll be with friends. To me, friends are so important.
Yeah.
And I've got beautiful, wonderful friends. And I spoke to a friend of mine who, we always have these sort of conversations. And I said, do babies turn their faces and smile at you? And they said, yes, that's so weird. We always giggle about that, my husband and I. I then called another friend of mine. I said, do babies always smile at you? And they said, I don't look at babies.
Yeah.
And there's no wrong or right, but it was very interesting learning about where people are, you know, they're at a higher frequency. And I love that.
So do I. I love it. And I love finding out, because you mention the word frequency and some people will go, oh, frequency. But we can't see frequency and we can't hear it, but we can measure it. We know it exists. We know that you are radiating right now an electromagnetic field that's touching mine.
Even and everybody does.
Everybody yeah. does, and we can measure it. And there's this experiment where they take a photograph of a leaf and its electromagnetic field, and you can see it. And then they cut the leaf in half, they remove half of the leaf, and for a very long time afterwards, the full field remains. So your energy literally continues on when you are not even...
That's, and a lot of people say that about, you know, whether you believe or you don't believe, and we're not going to get into all of that, but past lives and spiritual energy and all the rest of it. A lot of people say, they use that example yeah. of the leaf. They yeah. say, when
because
you leave, your energy
science.
Is still yeah. there.
And so back to the babies and the frequency, we cannot see frequency. Our eyes will not show us it. But if our eyes were different, if our brain was more developed, we would be able to see how everything yeah. vibrates. And you would be able to see people's frequency, you like the Ready Break advert, but you would see it move and you would be able to see it. And just because our eyes can't see it, much like Wi-Fi works completely invisibly, you know, you put your phone, you put a code in your phone and it connects by frequency to a tower. And we believe that. But we don't believe that a baby can sense a higher frequency, you know, through your brain, which is far more evolved than a phone. So it's fascinating. And I love that more and more of this is coming to light.
Yes.
And I love it's being talked about, because if we were all
talking... It's not woo-woo. People don't go, oh, all that woo-woo. People are now talking about it all.
It's woo-woo is only science we don't have the facts for yet. Magic is only science we haven't yet discovered, you know.
Magic exists.
We would have thought that, oh yeah, it definitely exists.
Especially on Saturday mornings on Magic Radio. That's a whole other conversation.
Definitely.
But magic does exist, and it doesn't matter that we don't know how it works.
No. You have to have faith and hope, because they're magic in themselves, because they're magnetically attracting. If you're telling yourself through the electricity of your thoughts, which exists because they're electric, so they're real. If you're constantly thinking hopeful things and, you know, magical things and faithful things and believing it's going to be okay, then that's what you're magnetically attracting, just like the Wi-Fi tower in your phone. I love it. It is wonderful. And if we were taught more of it in schools,
and things like
that, how your brain actually works.
Yeah, and make young people feel it doesn't matter if you feel things. Feelings are good.
Feelings are chemical. We literally create chemicals in the...
But you've done... I mean, I was reading all about you and what you've done for poetry, because a lot of people were at school and they had to learn poems by rote. And I don't want to do poem. Oh, not poetry. Oh, God, poem.
Yeah, it's not rock and roll, is it?
But what's happened is you've elevated the word and the actual... The poem. It's incredible that suddenly people say, oh, poem. Oh, that's a poem.
Yeah.
You don't just have to have a rhyming couplet and...
Yes. Yeah. I didn't mean to. I didn't even particularly think about poetry when I first started. I thought I just called it words. So the front...
I like that you call it words.
Yeah, it would just say words for comfort and light. Because, again, I wanted to take the pressure off, what kind of a poem is this? I don't know. The message comes to me, sometimes it rhymes, sometimes it doesn't, sometimes it looks like a poem, sometimes it's just prose, and I don't stop to think about it. So poetry can be a divisive subject, like you say, and a lot of us were put off it at school, but really it's a vessel for deeper conversation. When your brain sees a poem on a page or on Instagram, it recognises how it looks, it knows you're going to receive an emotional message, so your brain goes, ah, I'll open my heart and take this in. It doesn't read it like an instruction manual from your toaster, you know, it knows what it's going to be. And so I love that.
Do you read instruction manuals?
Never.
Never do. Never. No.
I am allergic to them.
If you have to put something together, If you have
instinct.
Yeah, I don't, you know, the IKEA manual. No, thank you very much. No.
And sadly, my husband doesn't either. Because I think...
But you said he's a builder.
I think relationships need one person who's good with an instructions manual and one who isn't. And we are just both completely rubbish. So, yeah, it's everything's done on a wing and a prayer. He's a very good builder, though.
She says, looking through the glass, because he's out there.
Just don't lean on the... No. No, he's wonderful. But a lot of it is intuitive and instinctive. And he's an audible learner. So he has to listen to learn. I don't know how I learned.
I love, but I'm the same. I'm audible. Everything's visual though, because it's TV, and it's always visual and sound.
I think I need the visual and the audio as well together. Because if I'm just listening, I don't know what I've.
How I have it? I like it all.
Do you?
But if you listen, then you can create pictures. It's like reading a book. Reading a book.
Can you create pictures in your mind when
always,
you read a book?
Yeah.
I can't. Isn't it funny? Apparently, it's a 50-50 split. Of people who can...
That's also that, weirdly, the person I was talking about, we always do that thing about, can you visualise things? And she can't visualise things. Can you not visualise things?
There are certain things that I can visualise. I can feel the things, really feel them. But my mum and my husband will walk in me into an empty barn and say, right, so you just have to imagine, no, I can't do it. And they're saying, and this is going to be
there. I can't do
and
that.
I can't do it. I just can't build it in my mind visually.
But can you, if you close your eyes now, and I was to give you a picture to visual to see, can you do it? Okay, there is a just walked in now is a grey horse with a pink panda sitting on top of it. See, I can visualize it totally.
No, I can't. Oh. When I start to build one part of it, the other part's gone, so I can't see the full.
I've got really vivid
imagination. That's why I write so much, because I don't think I'm building the picture visually.
Because a lot of people, if you read a novel, can you picture the people in it?
I can feel it. I'm in it. I'm completely invested. I'm emotionally attached. I can picture elements of it. Is all I can see.
Yeah.
But I can't.
You can't
build.
Read. You know, you can teach yourself.
Yeah,
to
you
do
can
that.
Teach it. Yeah, maybe I'll do that.
So let's talk social media as well, because that's a big part of what you do. We had Case Kenny was on the show recently. I love his notes. I just think he's brilliant. Lewis Howes. So all of these people who put stuff on Instagram and just these wonderful quotes. And our lovely Vex King, who
yes.
I know, he's been on this a couple of times. And there's wonderful quotes, wonderful poems, whatever you want to call words.
Yeah.
Like you said, words. It's very impactful.
It is. It can really change your day.
Mm.
And more than it can change your day, it can change the whole trajectory of your journey and your life. And I know that because the things that I keep along the way are people's messages. I screenshot them.
Oh, how lovely.
And I keep them because that's what it's
that's
all about.
That's so nice.
It's the important thing,
yeah.
isn't it? How I always wanted to create words that would be used every day, not just for a funeral, not just for a wedding or, you know, something big. But I like the help every day. So it's a random page. You open this book randomly every day. You get a message. And I always say the book knows exactly what you need that day, and it works. So sometimes I'll go on social media and say, right, who wants a random page? And they comment below and I give them a random page, and it's always the page that everybody didn't know they needed, or that's exactly what I needed to reframe today. And that is the total joy of it for me, because these small words in the right order at the right time, there's nothing that they can't achieve. They can really do so much.
This is reasons to be joyful, and we always ask everybody. I don't know if you were asked to bring in something that brings you joy.
Yeah.
But please, could you? I never know what it is. So it always surprises me. Please, could you tell me what it is that brings you joy?
Well, you're already looking at it. It's around my neck.
Your necklace.
Yes.
It's gorgeous. Do you know what? I've looked at it a lot. It's fabulous. So it's gold heart for people. Okay, so people listening, it's a chunky gold chain with a gold heart, with lovely little sort of spurs off it.
Like starburst, isn't it?
Yes,
like
and a red heart that's
and
on top of the gold one.
The heart, so I have a green one and I have a light one as well.
And tell me the story of the necklace.
So this was gifted to me by a woman who I have a huge crush on, much like yourself, Gabby. And I do believe that that is the thing that women should be doing in this world, going around falling in love with each other, because we're wonderful beings.
And supporting each other.
And supporting. Yeah. And this was gifted to me by Holly Tucker from Holly & Co., who I think is, I just think she's wonderful. And I spoke at her Congregation of Inspiration, which was incredible. And she gifted me this by made by her friend, and it's called Petrula Necklaces, Petrula Jewellery. And I love it because when I touch it, which I do a lot because I'm quite sensory, I need a fidget, it immediately brings me mindfulness because I remember to hold the heart. It then immediately opens my heart, which I've been doing a lot of meditation on. Heart coherence with your brain. You open your heart, you open your brain, you sync the two. It's joyful. The feeling is immense. So it's mindfulness for me. It helps me when I'm in a nervous situation or I need reminding what it's all about. But also, it attracts so many beautiful messages from people in real life, from strangers or online. People will say to me, oh my goodness, I love your necklace. And you're then having a conversation with a stranger.
I loved it. I love conversations with strangers.
Isn't it the best thing?
Yeah.
The complimenting of a stranger, we're talking, it's World Kindness Day today, is the most powerful thing you can do because you watch that person's whole magnetic field radiate joy in that
moment. I love
moment.
Doing it. I love seeing
Eyes
somebody.
Light up.
I love your coat. I love, oh, your hair looks good.
Yes.
Total strangers think, whoa, thank you.
And then they go away and they might do it or they might change the way they feel that day or the way they think. So it brings so much of that my
that
way.
Lovely.
Everybody.
And that it was a gift as well.
It was
and
a gift.
Now means so much. And she didn't know that it was going to affect you so much.
No, but I never take it off. I rarely. I have one other necklace made by another beautiful woman that's a yellow for my poem Yellow, which I adore. And that is the same. It attracts the same amount. But this one, it's just, it just keeps me in the message of
how
what it's all
wonderful.
About. It's all about love. At the end of the day, like you say, you're in the traffic, you're getting angry, you're getting caught up in your ego and your life, and you suddenly go, doesn't matter.
How wonderful.
Love matters, so this is the thing.
Oh, keep spreading your joy, and thank you so much. It's always lovely to see you.
And you too.
Really lovely.
You spread so much joy.
Episode of you.
And you share so many
episode
of
you.
These.
Oh. There we go. We'll just like to we'll be joy spreaders.
Yes, we're joy spreaders
joy
together.
Spreaders. So lovely to chat to you. Thank you,
you
Donna.
You too. Thanks, Gabby.